Greetings, salutations, welcome to Cap'n. For those of you that don't know, are aware of what Cap'n is, it's the Carlo Acutis Podcast Network, which is powered by the Diocese of Amarillo. My name is Chris Albrecht, Director of Communications for the Diocese of Amarillo, host of the West Texas Catholic, the podcast. And one of the things that we're trying to do with the podcast is involve other entities and ministries in the Diocese of Amarillo. And one of those is a very important one. It's vocations and seminarians. And joining us for a couple of minutes in his third of 7 years of study for the priesthood at St. Meinrad Seminary in Indiana for the Diocese of Amarillo, he's one of our great four seminarians, Ben Segoe.
It's
Segoe.
Chris Albrecht. Oh, it's Ben Segoe. Yeah. Sorry.
I think my wife might have an issue with me going to the seminary, and that's part of the reason I didn't go. There was a time when I was 16, 17, I thought about it, but I thought, I don't think seminary rectors would care about the entourage of women I would bring with me, so that did not happen. Women. By the way, Ben has a newsletter that he puts out, and he's going to talk about how you can get a subscription to it absolutely free of charge and keep up with everything that's going on with his life. So let's look at the latest newsletter from you. Mm-hmm. Wow, tough semester, huh?
Very tough. Very
Why was it tough?
It was all kinds of stuff. It was like, so, yeah, seminary, it's its own little bubble where, like, you get put in a place where your job is to become a better human. And it's like, that's a really good goal. Uh-huh. But it also can feel at times like a little bit of a microscope. It can feel a little bit like, oh, no, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I becoming a better human? Like, it's a pretty big question to just always have on your heart, you know? Like, at music school, when I was at music school, it's like, okay, become a better musician. And it's like, okay, that's pretty measurable. It's mm-hmm. like, I wasn't able to play that piece of music, but now I can. Becoming a better human or becoming who I am supposed to be, like, all of this stuff is very much less measurable. So in the midst of, like, some really dense philosophy courses, in the midst of, you know, family stuff and all kinds of things, it's like, yeah, it ends up being quite a heavy, heavy semester. But it was because it was the hardest one ever, it was also, like, one of the most fruitful ones. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but, like, how to, yeah, everything just works together. The classes, the homilies that the deacons are giving at the seminary, my friends, like, the conversations we have, going down to drink beer at the Unstable, the little pub we have down there, like, all the music stuff that they have me involved with, it all just kind of he weaves it together and just, like, teaches me, like, yeah. Give me your heart.
And he keeps you guys busy, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Some of the classes you took this last semester, modern philosophy. Mm-hmm. That gives me a headache. The next one, you got to pronounce it for me, epistemology?
Mm-hmm. Epistemology.
Epistemology mm-hmm. has to do with the epistles, I guess, right? No.
Right, yeah. That one's about knowledge, the study of knowledge. Okay. How do we come to know things? Can we know things? Are we in a simulation? Is everything just fake? Or is it real? Or how can we know that it's real? And all this kind of stuff. So
metaphysics, another one. You learn what is being, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Ethics. Oh, now we can peel back onions on this one big time there, because I know, and I still don't think you're going to get to the core of what is right human behavior.
Right. Yeah. It's very much like just looking at a bunch of philosophers, especially during the Enlightenment is what I was going to say. We started with some ancient guys and then looked at how, like, ethics becomes divorced from, like, our goal. You know, everything is based on, okay, here's our goal as a human for the ancients, and all of our behavior is directed that way. But whenever that goal is taken away and they say, there is no goal, it's just live, but behave right, it becomes very confusing. And so the Enlightenment thinkers, they divorce ethics from what's called teleology, like an end goal. And seeing the effects of that and then where we are today of just, like, trying to figure out what's going on. Of course, within the Catholic Christian atmosphere, it's like there is still teleology. There's still an end goal. And so we have that kind of ancient way of coming up with human behavior still. Anyway, yeah, I don't mean to make this into a lecture.
But. And the Satanic Epic?
Yes. Ooh. It sounds very dramatic, doesn't it?
It does sound dramatic.
The satanic epic.
Or unless you know Dana Carvey brings back the church, which he has brought back the church lady on some episodes of SNL lately. You know, the satanic epic. It doesn't sound as good as you said it. But anyway, what was that all about?
So pretty much for that class, we went upstairs to the rector's lounge, which he's the principal, the president, the guy in charge of the seminary. He's a monk, Father Dennis. We went up to his lounge, we'd get some drinks, and we'd pretty much just talk about how Satan comes up in literature. Satan or evil, really. And so we started with some ancient Greeks. Evil is to not meet your telos, your teleology. And then throughout the time, what is it for the Jews? What is it for the Christians? How does it develop within Protestantism and then into Puritanism and then in America and then today, where are we at as far as that's the work of the devil and all this kind of where does that come from and why do we have that and how does it show up in literature? We looked at Frankenstein and Paradise Lost as a couple examples. And
the favorite subject was modern philosophy for you, right?
I liked why? That one. Yeah. The professor for that one was just fantastic. He did a really good job of telling the story of how these thinkers are connected. I think with philosophy, it can become very daunting when it's just here's a bunch of dudes and what they thought. But when it becomes a story of let's look at where we are today, and then let's look at all of the thoughts that happened to bring us here. And so modern philosophy was kind of the chapter of our philosophical studies that was really putting flesh on okay, here's a lot of the guys that put us where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
The last few semesters, we've been studying a lot of the ancients and a lot of the medievals, so Plato, Aristotle, some Boethius, some Aquinas. And those guys are so rich and so good. And those are my favorite guys to study, really, because they're so rich. But it's really looking at a map of Pangaea is what I tell people. It's okay, this is the world you live on. It's not really. the continents are all smushed together, and it doesn't look like anything like it does today. But it technically is the world we live on. But if you got a few more maps of the continent spreading out further and further, and it begins to look more and more like the world we live on today, then it makes more sense of, okay, yeah, that's the world I live on. And so getting that whole story is really, really fun. And the modern philosophy was this chapter where it was okay, now this world is recognizable. These guys are talking about things that I recognize. Freedom, what is freedom? And history is a big deal. Science becomes a huge deal for us humans. We become obsessed with what can science do and what cannot science do and what are the limits? And all those questions really come to fruition at modern philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Ben Segoe is our guest, one of our four great seminarians for the Diocese of Amarillo, and you have a newsletter you send out, and we're going to make it easy for people to subscribe or to keep up with you by looking for the link on the podcast network, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looks like it's going to be there on the website right here.
Let's make that happen and keep up with everything that's going on with Ben. One thing that you dealt with a lot and have been dealing with a lot since you were at St. Meinrad, prayer. How has your prayer life changed since the very first day you set foot at St. Meinrad?
It's become more. we're praying all day up there at seminary, and it's and praise God for that, because that's everything. So kind of the general structure of communal prayer is morning prayer is chanted as a community. We all come down to the chapel. There's an organ that plays. We all sing the psalms and in the liturgy of the hours. And then we have mass at 11:30, right before lunch. And then usually there's adoration at some point in the day. It's either before the day starts or it's at around 4 o'clock. 5 o'clock, we have evening prayer that we chant with the organ and everything. And, so that's the general structure of the day communally. But then, of course, there's everything that's happening inside of me and just coming to understand who I am, who he is, who the people around me are, what is reality, what is the world that we live in, and what does it need, and how can I give it what it needs? How can he give it what it needs through me? And yeah.
As a musician, music is very much a valuable part of your life at St. Meinrad. And it looks like from reading the newsletter, you're widening your horizons a little bit there with other musical instruments and using this musical instrument a little bit more as mm-hmm. well. Talk about that, please.
Yeah, I've had some – there's a bunch of guys at the seminary who are super musical and musically inclined. And so getting to team up with some of them, that's super fun. So I've been playing some guitar. There was a night that there's a like a social event that my buddy and I just got some music together for. Played a bunch of songs that I enjoy and some of the songs that he wrote, and I wrote a song, and so we just played those for the people there. I got to play my French horn. You know, I studied music before seminary, so I haven't really gotten to play my horn a whole lot since coming to seminary, but there's a monk who plays the euphonium, kind of like a little small tuba, and there's a seminarian who plays the trumpet. He played at Juilliard, and he's just, like, ridiculously good, and so playing with those guys, we got a little brass trio together and played for a liturgy or two and just had some fun with that. I've been organizing some chant schola. The seminary put me in charge of organizing some music groups for particular liturgies, and so I've been doing that. And I've been having fun with it and getting to still use my gifts while also serving the community. Yeah.
There's a line here in your newsletter that I just saw that had me scratching my head, proverbially. Sometimes teachers don't teach the way I want them to.
The next word is shocker.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Elaborate, if you will, please, for just a second.
Sure. Academics at St. Meinrad are stellar. Just some of the actually the best academics and, like, best staff and best teachers that I've ever encountered. It was actually when I got to seminary, I always tell people, like, it finally felt like, okay, this is what school is supposed to be like because of how good those teachers are. But everywhere you're just going to find professors who teach a different way than the way that I learn. So, for instance, this semester there was one where he would kind of sometimes just sit down and read a lecture, like, just right off the paper. It was maybe, like, a little bit less organized than I wanted it to be or something like that. It might be hard to take notes and hard to follow along. And so in class every time I was always getting frustrated and was like, oh, why doesn't he just, like, everything that he needed to do to change so that I could learn better. But eventually, yeah, the Lord was like, hey, maybe you can change some things. And so learning to, you know, accept what's going on in the class and be grateful. I mean, be grateful that he's there giving us this stuff and giving us this, it's just knowledge. It's so good. So eventually by the end of the semester, figuring out, yeah, maybe the teacher isn't the guy who always needs to change. Maybe there's some things I can do to adjust to the situation and make the best of it. So,
big semester for diocesan vocations. We get ourselves a new seminarian. The first 2 years at St. Meinrad, you had now Father Ryan Winger there kind of helping you along and showing you the ropes. And now you're the one kind of showing the ropes to our seminarian, Andres Polgarin, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about Andres. How was his first semester?
Super chill dude. Super awesome. Love him. He's from Colombia, and he's been just, like, thrown into the deep. I mean, totally different country, totally different academic situation. He had spent some time at San Antonio, at seminary in San Antonio before this, but being at St. Meinrad, completely new people, completely new staff, like, all of your formators are new, which I think in a normal university, it's like, okay, you're in a new university, but the same thing is going on. The teachers are teaching, you have to learn, get the information that you need to do the job. But at seminary, it's a little bit different getting placed into a new seminary because of how personal it is and how much the formators really need to know who you are in order to form you into who you're meant to be. Like, coming into a new seminary is a little bit intimidating. And so he's been kind of just, like, braving that and working through that, and he's been stellar.
We pray the prayer for vocations every Mass in this diocese on the weekend. Please continue to pray for more vocations for our diocese. Before we talk about what's next, since this is the first time we've had you on camera mm-hmm. here in this diocese, and yeah, that face is going to go over real well, isn't it? Well, at least yours is better to look at than mine. Let's talk about your vocation story.
Sure.
How in the world did Ben Segoe wind up a seminarian for the Diocese of Amarillo?
Yeah, that's the question. It's a story that he's been weaving since eternity. So it's one that I continue to get to discover as I continue to live. Loved music growing up. Loved it a lot. And when I joined band, I was like, music is what I want to do with my life. This is so much fun. We're getting to do something together. We're making one sound together, even though we're playing different instruments. This gives me life, and I love doing this. And so ever since sixth grade, I was like, I want to be a band director. But after I realized that I couldn't go to Texas A&M to do that, which is the town that I grew up in, all of my family went to Texas A&M, I was like wanting to go there. Found out that I couldn't go there because they didn't have a music program. So I had to find out, okay, where can I do this? What would make sense? Found out that WT is a pretty good music education program, so I moved on up here. Was always kind of Catholic, I suppose I should mention that, where family would go to Mass. I was an altar server growing up, went to Catholic school, had a good theology teacher in high school, so had a pretty good solid foundation. And so when I got to WT, I was like, the student center is where I want to be, the Catholic student center. Those are going to be my friends, and I want to be with them. So got plugged in. From there, heard about Totus Tuus. Some friends who had done the Totus Tuus program, they went around the diocese over the summer, teams of four, and you're just catechizing, evangelizing, doing songs, skits, silly things. Met those people, and I was like, that sounds like a lot of fun and sounds like something I want to do. Sounds like a way I want to spend my summer. So signed up to do Totus Tuus in 2019, and that was kind of the very beginning of it, was while I was in music school, getting to serve the diocese and getting plugged into all these different parishes over the diocese, meeting all kinds of priests and seeing them live their priesthood joyfully. And once I saw them doing that, I was like, okay, it's possible to be a priest and not be sad and lonely, pretty much, you know? Because that's the stigma. It's like, priesthood is sad and lonely and
silly. And it's really not.
And it's not. And witnessing that summer, me as a college kid having this conception of the priesthood being totally just shattered, was really kind of the beginning of it. Seeing these guys give life to me, give life to the guys around them and the people around them, and loving it was like everything. From there, I started asking, okay, is the priesthood going to be something for me? Is this something that I need to do? I had been dating up until that point, and so I'm trying to figure out how that's going to work and if that needs to change or what needs to happen. So eventually, yeah, decided to, yeah, this is what needs to happen. This is the new direction. I'm going to start thinking about this a little bit more particularly. From there, I just got more connected with spiritual direction, started to ask these questions. Is the priesthood for me? Is my heart shaped like a priest's heart, or is my heart shaped like a married person's heart? In other words, do I find life in a particular in a particular love to a person, or do I find life in a particular love with lots of people, however you want to phrase that? I found life in the second way. And mm-hmm. So there were three main obstacles that were kind of making me hesitant to say yes to going to seminary. One was celibacy. That seems silly and lonely and stupid. And the second was music. I love music. And if I'm a priest, I don't get to do music. And that seems silly. And even if I were to be a priest, would I be one here in the Amarillo Diocese, or would I be one in the Austin Diocese where I grew up?
Mm-hmm.
Celibacy worked itself out because I was given a book about how spiritual fatherhood is the reason for celibacy. A radical openness to others generating life is what helps generate life in the people around you. It's a participation in the fatherhood of God, who generates the Son celibately. There's not God the Father and God the Mother making God the Son. It's just God the Father generating the Son. And that fatherhood is the fatherhood that the priesthood participates in. So that was huge, and that was helpful. Music was kind of solved by saying, like, okay, everything that I love about music, I find in the priesthood. The band director gets to bring all these people together and make one sound out of them, even though they have all these different instruments. And the same way the priest brings all these people together or in the mass, unites their hearts, not just in the sounds that they're making, but in the actual like body of Christ. So there was a more fundamental unity that the priest is able to bring about through the sacraments. The diocese thing worked itself out because he introduced me to the Amarillo Diocese, and I was like, this is it. This is where I need to be.
We're glad you're here, too. Yeah. Very glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
We have just a couple of minutes left. You are, I know, very overwhelmed by the support you receive, and I know you want to say thank you real quick to everybody about that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, sure. From family to friends to just all the people in the parishes, given the nature of Totus Tuus, I've gotten like such an incredible opportunity to be just in lots of different parishes over the diocese. I don't feel like I just have the one home parish and then the rest of the diocese is along for the package. My heart is really wrapped up in the entirety of the diocese and in each parish and in each, all of the people that I meet there. They're always so supportive. They're always so kind and they're just wanting the best for me and the best for the diocese. And so thank you for that, for the prayers. I'm always hearing about prayers and masses being offered and all that kind of stuff. And my heart is just exploding because of that. So thank you very much.
So as we get ready to begin 2025 spring semester, it looks like we have philosophy and theology kind of colliding or passing through, right? Tell us about that.
So as far as classes, I know we're going to be talking about contemporary philosophy. So the next step in from moderns into the 20th century and what those guys are thinking about. Also looking at some other stuff, whatever that's going to be. The seminary's got it all worked out. They know what's going to be best for me.
They know exactly right.
I just go along for the ride.
But in the summer, you're going along for the ride in Mexico. Tell us about that. Sí.
Estoy viendo a Mexico. I'm going to Mexico. So there's going to be a Spanish immersion that I fly to Cuernavaca, Mexico. It's, I think, about 45 minutes southwest of Mexico City. I'll stay with the host family, and I'm going to be completely immersed in Spanish. And so just trying to figure out, polish up the Spanish a little bit. There's a lot of Spanish-speaking people in this diocese, and being able to communicate with them is necessary for the priest.
A question I meant to ask you earlier, Ben. Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for, let's say, parents of young men and young men or even young ladies who are considering a vocation to the religious life?
Just remember that it could be you. I think the default position is like, no, that's for the other people. That's for the holy people. That's for the people that do church things. That's for the people that are off in that other world. But that's what I was thinking, and now I'm there. So just keep in mind that the Lord, he works in ways that we have no idea. I was set on, since sixth grade, I'm going to be a band director. I'm going to be married. And he's working things in ways that I think are just multiplying themselves to be so much more than I could imagine. So whatever his plan is for you, it's not going to be less than your happiness. It's always going to be maximizing the joy and the happiness that you experience in this life. And so that, because ultimately it's about communion with him. Your vocation is going to be communion with him. And whatever that means is going to make you most happy. And so, just remaining open to it, remaining open to that idea that he can do things that you don't expect.
Ben Sego is one of our four great seminarians for the Diocese of Amarillo, and I give you the last word in the conversation. Anything that we didn't ask you that you wanted to bring up or anything else that you wanted to discuss, here's your chance.
Sure, yeah. Just keep in mind, seminarians are people, priests are people, and we love people, and that's all. I mean, it's easy to put us into like, oh, they're over there and we're over here. But that's totally not the case. We're all people, and we're just trying to find Christ together. So I'm excited to do stuff like this podcast to hopefully give a little bit of light into that and let people know that we're all on the same track together.
Or may God continue to abundantly bless you on this journey, Ben Segoe, and we thank you for joining us here on Cap'n.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
And we thank you for joining us here on Cap'n, the Carlo Acutis Podcast Network, powered by the Diocese of Amarillo. Hopefully, we're going to get more entities involved with this, and we'll have the West Texas Catholic, the podcast, rolling out in the first of the year. Have yourself a continued blessed Advent and a very Merry Christmas. Remember, abortion is not and never will be health care. Viva Cristo Rey.